Hey, Sox fans, welcome to Good Guys Talk Back, a local fan-centric Chicago White Sox podcast, hosted by Nick Borowski and Pat Hester.
Fans, hey, welcome back to Good Guys Talk Back. Hey, this is episode 271. I am Nick Borowski. This is a fan-centric Chicago White Sox podcast. We do this live every Sunday night at 9:15 on our Good Guys Talk Back YouTube channel. Appreciate if you subscribe, like, pass it along, all that good stuff. Audio available absolutely everywhere. Join us in the comments. Let us hear what you have to say here. 2 out of 3 from the Cardinals in St. Louis. Our Chicago White Sox are absolutely white hot here at 8-26. We'll get into some other numbers in just a moment. With me, as always, my best friend, diehard Sox fan, Pat Hester. Hello,
friendo.
Sir.
Thanks for bringing me in, buddy. I hope you're well. I'm excited about this series win. For me, it's especially special. I love whenever I can, rub it in my wife's face a little
Tell me about that. I want to know. You've got a lot of Cardinal fans in your life. People who might just start listening to this podcast. You have a lot of Cardinals fans that you see.
My entire in-laws. Our diehards, my daughter has drifted to that side, and rightfully so. There's no reason really to stay on my side of town. And so it is enjoyable. I actually gave it a little bit to my nephew, and just a laughing emoji, sent him a picture of the series. I said, and then he says, well, you're still the worst team in baseball. And I said, that's what makes it so funny, Sage. That
how old is this
lost
person?
How old is this
person that you're battling with? Baseball.
So anyway, I'm glad to be here. I'm excited to talk a little bit about a character I've never heard of, Bill Veeck. I can't wait to get into that because this is somebody I've never heard of before.
Oh,
so,
my goodness.
I thought I was a fan of the team, but apparently I don't know the full history. So I know you're going to educate me. I'm excited to talk about a series win. They didn't take care of business at all versus the Twins, but we'll just live for the weekend. Everybody's working for the weekend, dude.
Yeah. I mean, the last time we talked, they had just swept the Rays in a weekend series of Friday through Sunday. And here we are getting to talk about a series win in St. Louis. I wanted to know about that because I you've got a lot of Cardinals fans in your life that have been giving it to you for a while now. And again, Sox are 8-26, but how bad do you have to feel as a Rays fan, as a Cardinals fan, with the Sox coming into town, taking 2 of 3, and we'll get to some of the details because it was a weird series, especially Saturday. Hello to Peyton, Sydney, Key. Thank you so much for jumping in. Sox are the only team in the AL Central under 500. Okay, so this very forgiving. Some might have called it an easy division this past offseason. Heading into the 2024 regular season. Oh, thank goodness we're in the AL Central. AL Central teams taking care of business. Now, the Twins, you're welcome, Twins, because several of those wins are because of playing the Chicago White Sox. But Sox in the cellar, of course, 14 games back, if you're paying attention to that. However, the last 10 games are White Sox 5-5, Pat. So Thunder.
Oh, we know that. We know how that feels. 500 is fantastic. Can you remember? You remember when they were 500, Nick? That was so fun. But we hated it so much. We were living this nightmare of a 81-81 season. Yeah. Let's get Tony the hell out of here. The man is asleep all the time. He can't manage. It's just awful. 81-81. I would take 81-81 right now. Like you wouldn't believe. It'd be a beautiful thing. I would love it. But this is where we are. And you know what? Just let's go back and talk a little bit about this division. And I really hope that the powers that be, the people in the front office, are just eating a bunch of crow and looking at themselves and going, we can't go out next offseason, whether we do anything or not. we can no longer mention anything about it. It's a good thing that we're in this division, because you continually get beat up by, you know, you've been beaten up by the Kansas City for the last several years. And for, and before that too, we've always had trouble with Kansas City, the, you know, the basically the doormat of the AL Central for many, many years. We can't get past the Twins no matter what year it is. Basically, we always lose to the Twins. Indians, we always seem to, or, I'm sorry, Guardians, we always seem to have a problem with. I really hope that Chris Getz, Jerry Reinsdorf are looking themselves in the mirror and going, maybe that's not the right thing to say anymore. Maybe we should just say, let's try and build the best possible damn team that we can and hope that we can compete in this division.
Yeah. Well, well said. That was always cringy to me and has been, you know, even when other people, I think Plesak with MLB Network started talking about the Central and saying, well, you know, it's the Central. It's the AL Central. Of course the Sox can compete. They're a big market team. They've got money to spend. Like, have you not followed this team or who runs it and who owns it for the last couple decades? But yeah, I don't know, again, if Jerry even cares, really. I think his mind is other places, namely is the South Loose Stadium and Property 78 or whatever you want to call it. Is that going to get worked out? But that one thing that they need to stop, you're right, is absolutely referring to the AL Central. Stop talking about it. Stop saying we're in the Central, so it could be a quick fix. Don't use it. And I don't know if these other teams, you know, if it's even worth talking about bulletin board material, but it can't help, right? By you saying those things about other AL Central teams, I'm sure they take note if it's even worthy of getting yourself motivated. But, you know, anybody can use anything to give themselves a little edge. And when the Sox come to town or when they come to the South Side, it's like, oh, you thought this was going to be a, you know, walk in the park? Are you going to be able to compete with us, even though you did really nothing to do that substantially this offseason? I got another thing for you. And the Twins have done that. They have absolutely done that. I thought, well, you know, okay, we just got swept by the Twins. Well, maybe the second time around, they might have learned a couple things here and there, but not the case. We got the Rays coming up, you know, this coming week. So, I, you know, are the Rays saying, well, that's not going to happen again to us? Or are the Sox saying, you know what? Hey, we took care of business against Tampa. Maybe we can do the same. And then you've got back to the Central with the Guardians. So, and then we haven't even really played much against Detroit. You know, they're still on the schedule later on throughout the season, of course. So, yeah, that talk has to stop. You know, I think Getz is maybe starting to come around to like what he should have been saying back in August and September. We covered it last episode with, you know, the whole rebuild and how this is going to take time and everything opposite from what Jerry and Getz himself were saying when he first got the gig. So maybe, yeah, this is another one of those things of, yeah, we need to stop saying that. We need to stop talking about the Central. But you know,
yeah,
before,
and I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I also wish one of the beat reporters would ask him about it. You know, when Chris gets the next homestand, I'm sure he'll hold court like GMs normally do at the beginning of a homestand and say, you know, let's look at your record this year versus the AL Central. You've always said, you know, it's a good thing we're here. You know, why isn't the record reflective of that over not just this year, but several years? And I would just love, you know, whether it's Jesse Rogers or Pope or any of these guys to go on there and just ask the question, why do you want to stick your chest out and unfurl your feathers and walk about like your cocks of the walk about this division when you find yourself in the situation like you usually find yourself, like you did last year, the doormat in the division? You can't compete in this division. It's just, I didn't mean to go off on this tangent, but no, you brought it up and it just brings up like PTSD with me with, you know, how they look at the division in which they play in.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, they're absolutely, those questions have to be asked like directly to Getz to kind of call him out on some of the things that have been said recently about playing in this division. That's now everybody else is above 500. Except for the Sox, but you know, it's like, there's so many softball questions, and we all know why that happens is, you know, there's so few jobs in a dying field, being a beat reporter for a team, for a newspaper or publication or outlet or whatever. And you get on the bad side of a team, or, you know, and you're not getting the access that you want for these different articles and these different one-on-ones. And so it's tricky. These beat writers, you know, when they know where their, you know, their bread is buttered, and they have to be very careful with stuff. We all know what questions should be asked, and they probably know it themselves. And they know that their hands are tied in a certain way because of how, what kind of relationship, you know, they want with the team or the organization, I guess, to do their job, you know, to be able to write the pieces that they want to write, and so forth. But, you know, I want to talk a little crochet in what happened on Sunday here in this finale, as the Sox won 5-1. But you had mentioned La Russa, which a name that obviously plays in both St. Louis and Chicago. And I think he was even there on Friday, unless that was an old image of him. In a press box.
Unless it was a cardboard cutout, or
it was just kind of a tribute to him. But and we think back to that, you know, that 500 team that we all just kind of shook our fists at. And yeah, I think one of these episodes, I'll look back to where this at this time, you know, in 2023 or 2022, whatever, we'll compare where the Sox were. And because there's been a few seasons going back now where we just have not been happy as Sox fans. And boy, is it challenging. But, you know, just remind me, you might have told me before, Pat, how did your in-law, your family members that are big-time St. Louis Cardinal fans, how did they feel about Tony La Russa, especially maybe towards the end of the tenure in St. Louis?
Well, when I first started dating my wife, Tony was still the manager of the Cardinals. And my father-in-law, who is, you know, one of the biggest baseball, not just Cardinal fans, but one of the biggest baseball fans I've ever met in my life, loves baseball. He couldn't stand Tony. And it was a lot of, you know, but again, that was a younger version of Tony La Russa. It was the, I'm too smart for the room. I'm going to outthink everybody. I'm going to do things that are unconventional. But, you know, for the Cardinals, it was working, right? But it was some things that were done that were somewhat maddening at times. And I think Tony at that time, you know, it was a different way in which you could communicate to your players. And I think Tony's way still worked in that era. But then you remove him from the game for 10 years. And, you know, things changed a lot in between that time period. So I don't think that at least my father-in-law, I don't think he appreciated Tony La Russa as the manager until well after he wasn't the manager anymore, if that makes any sense. So
it's, you know, we bury the living and raise the dead, not necessarily literally, but obviously to your point, you know, we don't appreciate something until it's gone. So that's interesting to hear. I feel like you've told me bits of that years ago when La Russa first came on board, or we were struggling with La Russa as Sox fans. You made some mentions to that. So I just wanted to circle back to it. So Sunday, you've got this past game of the series finale here on Sunday. Crochet was your starter, 6 innings, 3 hits, 1 earned run. 6 strikeouts, 0 walks, which I love. I mean, his ratio has been great this season, walks to strikeouts. Gave up a home run, ERA 5.31. Now, he's at an innings limit, or I should say innings in total, when you think about his grand total of innings the last three seasons. Wow, he's starting to get into uncharted territory. I kind of want to talk about that in a little bit. With going along with some of the things that Grifol has said there throughout this episode, there'll be a few Grifol quotes of the week. I won't save it all to the end. There'll be a few sprinkled in throughout this episode, but so Crochet, you know, started out white hot and has scuffled and come back to earth as we kind of knew he would. But hey, 6 innings, you know, 3 hits, 1 earned run, 0 walks, again, 6 strikeouts. Not too shabby at all. Bullpen, 3 innings, of work, one hit, zero walks, five strikeouts. So Sox pitching did not issue a walk on Sunday, which is a real banner day. Eloy Jimenez with his fourth home run. And Brian Ramos, a guy we'll discuss in this episode, 1-for-3 in his first start. Got his first RBI. And DeJong, you know, he was, you know, he had a standing ovation from the St. Louis crowd on Friday. Is that a guy that, you know, you remember family members that are Cardinals fans talking a lot about this guy? I think he spent 7 seasons in St. Louis.
I would say, you know, St. Louis fans, if you go and play for the Cardinals and you play it the right way and you play hard for the team and you're there for a significant amount of time, regardless of maybe somewhat what your statistical, you know, resume will tell the rest of baseball, you know, he's going to be a fan favorite. And people they're going to show respect. They're good. They are really good fans in St. Louis. They know the sport. They come from all over. It's not just the St. Louis area. I mean, these St. Louis Cardinal fans are you know, there's not a lot of teams in that area or that region of the country when you think about it. So, like my father-in-law became a Cardinals fan. He lived in Oklahoma because that was the closest team that they had. He listened to it on the radio. So, if you go to a Cardinals game and talk to people, there are many people from different states. They're not from Missouri all the time and in that St. Louis area. They're all over the place, Southern Illinois, you know. So
I think the radio station that they called out on was KMOX, which is a powerful AM station. Mm-hmm. So it traveled and it grabbed fans from all over.
Oh, yeah, definitely, for sure. I'm not gonna say that DeJong deserved a standing ovation, but that's just how those fans are with ex players, especially if they were on, you know, I'm sure I can't remember back, but I'm sure he was on teams that went to playoffs and there was some opportunities for him to have moments in playoffs as a Cardinal player. So they're gonna recognize people and appreciate them for what they did, especially 7 years. That's a long time in one place.
Yeah. Saturday, a wild one. Boy, I was watching this and you know, had to take a break, as I think a lot of people did, when that crazy rain delay happened. Bases loaded for the Cardinals, bottom of the ninth. Brebbia was on the mound, I believe. The rain looks heavier on TV than it actually is in person, but it looked like it was just coming down. It was that old, you know, Caddyshack moment, you know, between I think it was the Priest and the Bill Murray. I mean, just sheets of rain. And so Cardinals trying to tie this up, bases loaded. I think there was one out, or were there two outs? Maybe just one out. And they called it. They a lengthy delay. And then after the delay, Sox were able to take care of business with Tanner Banks on the hill. Maybe they played for a minute and a half or something after a lengthy rain delay. But Corey Lee saw some action, double, I think a pair of RBIs. So the more I see of Corey Lee, I think Chuck Garfine put something up on Twitter X, just, you know, kind of his slash line last year and his slash line this year. And I, you know, jokingly, tongue in cheek, reposted it of like, oh, wow, a guy that gets more playing time is going to have better numbers. That's interesting. That's hopefully how it works. And it's kind of been happening with Lee. I mean, he's got some power. He's got an arm. Cuero and Lee could be your two guys behind the plate in the coming years. Obviously, I've talked about my desire to be done with the Maldonado experiment, whatever that was. But the more I see of Lee, and I think the more playing time he gets, this is the year for that. You know, yes. It'll transition us into the Brian Ramos conversation later this episode, but this is the year. Okay. Sox aren't going anywhere. I think the Marlins have kind of figured that out for themselves with their trade of Luis Arraez to San Diego. And, you know, Sox don't do a very good job of self-reflection. That's been a case for a long time. But I don't know, you know, who needs, when it needs to be said to Pedro, of like, stop, Pedro, just stop this. We are now going to switch gears and really do development. And a guy like Lee, I want to see getting absolutely a majority of the starts behind home plate.
Lee came over in which trade? Can you remind me of that? Because he was somewhat of a big piece that we got back as far as a prospect goes. So this is a guy that you want as part of your future, I would think. It doesn't really make a lot of sense for anybody involved, you know, fans, the front office, the team, to let Maldonado continue to get the majority of the innings behind the plate. It makes zero sense. The only thing I can think of is that, you know, Pedro is a catcher and looking at a guy that's a veteran and liking whatever that veteran presence you talk about with, you know, guiding a pitching staff through putting down the right numbers, whatever the hell that means. That's the only thing I can think of is that he's protecting him and it's a veteran and he's been around the game. So, you know, we're going to give him the majority of the, you know, the innings because of that. It just doesn't make any sense. And it's unfortunate that a lot, and that's not just, this isn't exclusive to Pedro Grifol either. I mean, this would be things that I would see managers do, not just with this organization, but with others. And you're making decisions based on, I don't know, because you want to take care of a veteran guy and maybe, you know, have that kind of guy or leadership or something like that. But you're not basing it on what's best for the team's future. That's what you have to think about. And I think that's hard for managers sometimes to go, I have to manage for this team's future and the development of guys that are going to be here next year, even though I may not be around to see this guy's future. Does that make
sense?
That's
true. Absolutely. And I think Pedro sometimes struggles. I know he struggles with handling rookies opposed to veterans. And I think he really plays up the respect with veterans, and really wants to cast, you know, Lee got cast aside last season and Colas, mm-hmm. just like, I have no time for you. You know, it's my veterans. And I think a guy like Maldonado, I think he just doesn't want to do him wrong. So it's kind of like not on Pedro that they brought him into this. Getz and company brought Maldonado in. And we all knew this was going to be a year of development. This was a year where we wanted to see the young guys that were ready, because this was going to be a waste year. I didn't realize it was going to be as bad as it is. But so, yeah, Pedro is stuck. But if Getz and Barfield and whomever do not say to Pedro, like, hey, you know, stop saying all the, like, you know, we're not compromising game stuff, which is a sneak preview to one of the Grifol quotes here. If they don't say anything to him, then Pedro's, I guess, like, well, I guess I'm playing for now. Like, we're still competing. Where Getz needs to maybe give that message of, hey, these are the people that need to start getting playing time. When we bring somebody up, we want them in the lineup, you know, right away. That's kind of the goal. That's the mission for us right now. So Friday and Friday's starter again, like Brad Keller. Brad Keller is involved in the White Sox now in the starting rotation. He saw limited action as a reliever and then was pushed into the rotation. Sox were shut out on Friday for the ninth time this year. Nine times.
I don't remember them being shut out nine times.
Nine times. So it was talked about Keller was going to join the rotation. He did. He went 4 2/3, 5 hits, 3 earned runs, a couple of walks, 5 strikeouts, 102 pitches. Thank you so much, Keller. I'm so glad you're around. Why are you around? I don't know. I'd rather see younger arms. I'd rather see something, you know, something that has the promise of tomorrow. Because today and this year, I guess it's a waste year, as in, like, are you really going to compete? Are you really going for the division? No. It's how are we going to develop guys? What are we going to be working with in 2025? I don't want to see Brad Keller. Like, that makes no sense to me. I'd rather see other arms. So you get an idea. You get an idea at the trade deadline, what you might need, and going into the offseason. Maybe I'm making too much out of it. I don't know.
No, you're not. I mean, this team should be in information gathering mode. Like, okay, this is we have the opportunity to do a lot of self-scouting at the major league level with guys that we're going to bring up and, you know, that aren't going to make it. They're going to go back down, that need more at bats or whatever it might be. But this is information gathering time. This is where you go, okay, let's look at the Maldonado signing. You know, is it worth, you know, blocking other guys that we need to see to get information on them for the future? Or do we need him here for the young pitchers that we have coming up? Do we need to have that kind of veteran presence because we need him to be able to handle some of these guys and get them through things to help get information on that? So if there's a reason, okay, I'm fine with the reason, but you can't let it to be blocking, you know, other guys that need at bats that obviously have at this point in their careers are much more skilled than you are. Maybe not at everything, maybe not in terms of the cunning and guile of major league game, but in terms of pure skill, you can't argue that you know there's anything close.
Yeah, I like how you said that at the beginning. You know, just kind of decisions have to be made. However you phrased it, like they're, you know, they're doing the research. This is the time for it, and you've got to have a body of information, enough data to make a decision, an educated decision. I think that's the goal, especially as, you know, the next few months ramp up with the deadline and so forth. So I want to talk Brian Ramos, and then I want to get to the whole Vec stuff with Triffin. I think it's a kind of a fan-centric-y. This is a type of conversation I think you and I would have been chopping up at the bar 20 years ago. You know, like we'd have heard this story, and as we're watching the game to fill the time, we probably would have been talking about this and you know, in our opinions and, you know, and what people have said on radio stations and all that kind of stuff. But let's get to Brian Ramos first. He's up, as I talked about. He was a defensive replacement on Saturday. He got his start on Sunday as Mendick is dealing with back issues. Ramos bypassed AAA a level entirely in order to make the MLB debut. So in double A, the slash line 182, 265, 307 over 98 plate appearances with Birmingham. Double A in 2023, slash line 272, 369, 457 with 14 homers over 339 plate appearances. So yeah, those numbers don't jump off the page, Mr. AAA, but this is a guy we've been hearing about, and I was hoping I'd get to see this season, as I don't think Yoan Moncada plays past this year in a White Sox uniform, so what's next in line for the Sox at the hot corner? This was what Pedro Grifol said here. Said Ramos will take it in on Saturday, taking it all in, but that he's going to get a lot of playing time. We're not compromising major league games. We're bringing a talented kid up here to perform. Also said they'll reevaluate things when Mendick is ready to return. So Ramos saw some time, very limited time on Saturday, then got the start on Sunday. So this was now Grifol after Sunday's win. Ramos is a presence out there. He looks the part when he stands in the box. It's fun to have him here because he's dangerous and he can run and he's athletic. It's going to be fun to watch him play. So, Pat, going back to this whole compromising major league games, that's the thing that I have a problem with that Pedro Grifol has said a few times during his short tenure as the White Sox manager. And I don't, you know, I think somebody has to say to him, like, we can compromise major league games. Okay. Mm-hmm. We're 8-26. We ain't going anywhere this year. That was kind of the plan. And now it's really the plan. So,
yeah,
I hate to like say that we don't really care if we win or not, that there's probably a different way of phrasing it, but it is about development. It's absolutely about seeing how Brian Ramos performs. It's absolutely about watching him defensively and offensively. So, you know, I said something, you know, in social media about the Sox decided to compromise games a long time ago when they kept Pedro Grifol as manager. way back when. You made your choices, White Sox. So for Grifol to start saying that stuff, I absolutely disagree, but it was good to see Ramos get a start during this weekend series.
Well, what I enjoyed about it, Nick, was the sacrifice fly. And right, that was the first run they scored today, if memory serves. And I'm sitting there and watching the first couple innings before we had to leave for our game today. And I'm sitting there with my son, who's the Sox fan in the family, and he's my favorite. Don't tell any of my other kids, but he is the favorite since he's the White Sox fan. And, you know, I say, look at this kid right here. This is what winning baseball is about right there. It's getting that run in from third base with less than two outs with a sacrifice fly. That's what's the difference between being one of the worst teams in baseball over the past, you know, let's call it a year and a half, right? Because they were terrible last year. It may have not been the worst team record-wise, but then you come into this year now with the worst record. That's the difference between that and being at least an average baseball team, is executing when the opportunity is there to score runs. Because how many times, and even when the Sox were at least decent, they struggled in this area. Like situational baseball, runner on third, we have to get this run in. And again, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that it's easy to just go ahead and hit a fly ball all the time, because there's a pitcher out there trying to make sure you don't do that type of thing. But I love to see it. I'm excited about that. That tells me, you know, I don't know if this kid will be a star or if he'll just be a flame out. I have no idea. But those are the types of things. I'll take that every day of the week. You get in there with a situation and you bring our first run in. Man, that's fun to see. And it's not the exciting thing. It's not maybe the sexy thing that you want to watch. But again, I'm not going to get out in front of my skis and say that this is the best thing since sliced bread. But I'm glad to see a kid get an opportunity. And I'm glad to see him be able to cash in when he's got a run standing out there for him to drive in. Yeah. So, I very excited about that. I don't know if this kid will be any good or not. I have no idea, but you know, let's give him the opportunity in the run.
Absolutely. You got to give the opportunities, and then there should be others. And I think Matthew, I put up his post here on our live stream, and welcome Matthew. Good to have you back. Matthew said, "We're not compromising games." That quote there is Pedro telling the fans what he thinks we want to hear. And I think that's a valid point. And I think he needs to get the message from Getz, where Getz needs to tell him, like, excuse me, that's not the plan anymore. Like, you know, we are compromising games because we are developing guys. We're looking to see guys, what we have in the system. Yeah. And so maybe, you know, Pedro will change that kind of that language. But you know, I've seen the farm system all over in terms of ranking. I think it's such a, you know, subjective thing. You know, it depends on who's making the list. And folks, we've been through this. The last time our farm system was up there and everybody was talking about it, and wow, what a farm system. What does it get you? You know, who's developing that farm system? What are, like, there's a lot of stuff behind the curtains that plays a role in that. And there's so many things that could go wrong. I hope that's not anywhere near the case this time around. I mean, we've got some promising arms, some bats, I mean, some defense. We've got some guys that I cannot wait to see eventually when they're ready. Ranking, whatever number they are, I honestly don't care. And I think it's probably because of what happened the last time, but I just want to see them given a fair chance when the time is ready. I think we do need a little bit of luck this time around for sure. But I hope we see a little bit more of Ramos here in the next, this coming week. We'll see how Mendick is doing with his back issues. So you want to get into this Bill Veeck stuff with John Schriffen. And I don't know how much time to give it. I'm sure folks that are watching and jumping in the comments and everything, they might have some idea of this or, you know, some thoughts. So John Schriffen did not grow up a Chicago White Sox fan. Of course, Schriffen is the new play-by-play man with Steve Stone. Did not grow up in the Chicago area. Okay. pretty new to baseball, like as like a consistent gig. This is his first play-by-play gig. I think really, you know, drinking from the fire hose is a kind way of saying it probably is he didn't get the job till like late into spring training or to the off season. So a lot to try to figure out, you know, a lot to try to wrestle with. I think he did well, hit the ground running, boots on the ground, opening day. He's going around to tailgates, trying to get the sense of the fans and everything. I love that. I think he kind of admitted, like, I haven't been around this. I didn't grow up a White Sox fan. Like, I'm just trying to understand the culture. And I know tailgating and all this stuff is really important, especially on opening day. This is okay. So John Triffin is going to continue to get better. I know there's a lot of people that are cringing with some of his calls and this, that, and the other. He's going to get better. He's going to find his voice. He hasn't had a lot to work with this year at all. Very, very difficult year to start off your tenure as a play-by-play guy. And, he mispronounced Bill Veeck, which Bill Veeck, you know, owned the Sox on a couple occasions, you know, put last names on the back of uniforms, brought in the exploding scoreboard, you know, a dozen of other things. You know, Veeck is in Wreck, an outstanding book. If you've ever had an opportunity, there's a Netflix series about the Veeck family and what his son has done and everything that goes along with, you know, being in the baseball business. So, you know, he mispronounced Veeck. It was Veeck, right? He called it Veeck, and he got absolutely dumped on, notably by Matt Spiegel on 670 The Score, which I'm sorry, I can't stand the guy to begin with. And that's just I'm not a fan of his. I don't listen to much Score anyway, and especially how Cubs-sided things are. But dumping on him that he should know how to pronounce Veeck and you know, look, if the organization, if the White Sox organization, if Jerry and everybody else said, look, for his orientation, for John Triffin's orientation, we got to make sure that he knows all the previous owners, how to pronounce them. He knows all of historical figures. Make sure he can spell and pronounce all the retired numbers. And he has to understand everything.
Wait a minute, did you say all the retired numbers?
All the retired numbers. All the White Sox retired numbers.
Can you say the word 35?
No, their names.
The names.
You're not. The names. Guys, let's go over numbers now.
Got it. I just want to clarify. Go over
numbers here.
Okay.
So, I mean, like, there's been a lot to unpack just recently with how things failed with this rebuild and where the Sox are, where Sox fans are, what's going on with this team. And you're telling me he's got to also, you know, if the organization wanted him to know all that, they would have made sure he knew how to pronounce all of these things and know all of the history, all of the important 120 plus years of White Sox history.
Yeah.
Now, some might say, well, he should be doing the homework on his own. And you're going to tell me a guy that's brand new to doing play-by-play with a team like the Chicago White Sox is going to sit there and make sure that they've got all of that. There is too much happening in that dude's world for him to try to cover how to pronounce Veeck. To me, it's not a big deal at all. And the fact that this team, this White Sox team, is so bad, the organization is absolutely pathetic at this point. That is just low-hanging fruit for Matt Spiegel and anybody else to just pick and run with it. Oh, my goodness. Can you believe what this guy did? Pat, I'm sorry. That was just it really brought a lot of anger out of me because this is a challenge to do play-by-play. And I know he's not everybody's favorite. I thought Connor McKnight would have been able to slide in. He's been around the organization for a while. He would, you know, but Triffin's been doing it for a while now. Okay. He's been a play-by-play guy. He hasn't been one for an actual team. This was his first gig. Lay off the guy. Absolutely lay off the guy. That's my thought.
Yeah. I don't, when I heard about it, because I didn't hear it live, it didn't bother me all that much. You said it exactly the way it should be said. This guy hasn't grown up here. He wasn't a White Sox fan. He's a broadcaster that was brought in. He's going to make other mistakes, by the way, folks. So if you're worried about just this one, get ready, because there will be more. He's learning on the job a little bit. And I'd rather worry about, let's just have a nice, clean, entertaining call of the game, right? I'm not so worried about the mistakes and the missteps along the way. If you were, as an organization, were concerned about that, then you would have made sure that you picked somebody that was a lifelong White Sox fan or someone from Chicago that knew the history. But obviously that wasn't important for the Chicago White Sox to have that. So this is what you get as a result, and that's going to happen. I'm not going to, because I'll be way too biased, go down the road of, the hacks over there at 670 The Score. I'm sorry. It's been a horrible product in my mind for a long, long time. Again, I'm extremely biased, but, I couldn't tell you anything about Matt Spiegel, because I haven't listened. I don't think I've listened to that station in I don't know how many years, Nick. So it's unfortunate. But as you know, because we're in this, I wouldn't say we're in this business, because you and I don't get paid to do this. We just do this because we love seeing each other every Sunday night. We love the Chicago White Sox. You're always looking for content. So anybody that's putting content out there that you can jump on because you're hoping to get reaction out of people, because you're hoping for people to call in and want to talk about it, the more you can be boisterous and loud and sound like you have a really good opinion, that's going to draw a reaction from people, whether it's good or bad. And when you have a reaction from people, then that's a product that you can sell, and that's a station that will be profitable. So that's all I'll say about that. I'm not really too worried about the mispronunciation. It is what it is. He'll have more mistakes. He is a human being after all.
Yeah. I think it definitely, it drummed up reactions. Obviously I just had one and had one a few days ago. I just thought it was lazy. It was absolutely lazy to go off after him like that. You know, go after the organization. You want White Sox content, go after the organization. And if that's boring to you and that is something that isn't going to get enough clicks, then I think just stick with the Cubs. Kenny Williams said it right. Stay out of White Sox business.
You better stay out of White Sox business.
Stay out of White Sox business. Schifrin's going to be just fine. You know, if you and I went back, even like years ago when we started, and anybody went back, if Spiegel himself looked himself in the mirror and went back to when he first started on the radio, I'm sure there were missteps here and there. And when you're kind of running in place and you're it's tough, and the team isn't giving you much, and you got people going after you because you mispronounced Bill Veeck's name. Give me a break.
When was the last time Bill Veeck was associated with the White Sox?
I think he handed the keys to Reinsdorf. So in 81, was that it? 1981.
Let's do the math. And that's a long, that's over 40 years ago. John Schifrin wasn't alive 40 years ago, was he? He's not even 40 years old. Is that true? He's a young man, right?
He's a fairly young man. I don't know exactly
his age. You saw him up close and personal. What would you say his age is?
I would put him at, I would say he's in his 30s. I mean, can I put him at 35? Does that make sense?
You can put him at whatever you want. I'm going to look it up though.
Andrew says 39. And there welcome, you go. Andrew. And 39?
I'll go with Andrew.
I
was typing, but Andrew was quick draw McGraw out there. So all good. Right, 39. So, he wasn't even alive when Bill Veeck owned the team. So let's move on, everybody.
Speaking of moving on, I think we're going to be moving on off of NBC Sports Chicago. Did you see this story? Speaking of content and all that other stuff, a new place to watch the White Sox, Standard Media Group, in partnership with the Hawks, the Bulls, and the Sox, will be the new television broadcast home for all three teams beginning in October, Pat, according to The Athletic. The media group is expected to make the network, which is unnamed, available across multiple platforms, including over the air and carriage agreements with cable and streaming providers. So before NBC Sports Chicago, I believe it was Comcast Sportsnet. And then before that, was it Sports Channel?
Yeah.
And then Sports Vision.
You think about that. It's like, could we have thought of a better name? Like, man, we have a channel all about sports. What should we call it? Maybe we should call it Sports Channel. That's fantastic.
Guys, everybody stop. Stop the research. I have one here. Sports
I have channel. I have a great idea. Yeah. Let's spitball it. It's just a first run, but I'm going to put it out there and you serve it back. Tell me what you think. Sports channel.
Love it. It's
after was Sports Vision. So it's like,
so gosh,
how are we going to make this better?
Peyton asked in the chat here, are we losing Chuck and Ozzie? Well, potentially, I guess. I mean, when the Sox went from, did they go from 1,000 to the score after the World Series in 2005 and we lost Rooney, right?
Yeah.
And then Rooney went he left and only Farmio came over.
Yeah.
There was a contract issue. There was a contract dispute and Rooney left and went to St. Louis. So I don't know. I don't know what this media group, if they've got their own people in mind, the direction they want to go in. I don't know. Sydney at a point, it's based out of Nashville, which is kind of funny to go with the whole, the Sox are leaving Chicago, going to Nashville type of thing. This goes back, this book, Chili Dog MVP. I've referenced it many, many times. And when I was on Lockdown Sox, feels like forever ago, I used to reference it quite a bit. It's an outstanding book, centering around like Dick Allen, the 1972 White Sox, and all the lore. And but it's much more than that. They talk about the city of Chicago as a whole, and what kind of happened with the Chicago White Sox as a franchise when they really owned the town. They owned the city of Chicago, and then it started to get into the television aspect. And the Sox went away from basic TV. They went to cable, which Harry Carey, who was the broadcaster for the White Sox for years before he went to the Cubs, had a problem with that. I think that was an issue with him. Of you're going to put the product on cable where people have to pay for it, I'm not going to be able to get all like the audience that I get. And the Sox lost a lot of audience. And mm-hmm. and you'll hear, I don't know if you ever get this, but when I was little and you're meeting relatives and stuff, and I'd hear these stories of why they're a Cubs fan, because Cubs were on WGN. They were on during the day, yep. And WGN, this power station that like went everywhere outside of the state of Illinois, and people were fans, and, the station was everywhere. And that wasn't the case. The Sox lost a lot of people when they went to cable. Now everybody's on cable. Everyone's on pay services. And so I'm wondering, what happens here? I've got YouTube TV. Mm-hmm. Are they trying to, is this station going to become available in my, in my whatever collection of channels package, or is this going to have to be a special channel that I'm going to have to pay for to get Bulls, Hawks, and Sox? I mean, would you pay extra, Pat, to get the Sox?
I can listen to the Sox for free on AM 1000, Nick. Why would I need to watch them?
You're going back to the radio days.
I'll get the old radio out with the antenna to just curl up next to it and listen to Len tell me about what's happening. In all seriousness, Nick, I would imagine that yes, it'll be something we're going to have to pay for. And that's, I think actually my boss asked me about it a couple weeks ago. He came up and said, what are you willing to pay to watch the Chicago White Sox? And at the time, I think they had a win. And I go, if you're asking me right now what I would pay to watch this team, you couldn't pay me to watch this team. So I'm not going to fork over any money. I think it's a colossal mistake right now to do all this, to try and push the stadium, to do the new the new station, all the things that you're trying to do that I feel like is taking away from what you really should be focusing on. Your focus should be about let's try and build a team that's has a, the opportunity for some sustained success that we've never seen before. Let's get that right. And then maybe then we can take a brand that's a winning brand and market it the proper way and build a fan base and build a, you know, let's make it so these people can't live without watching this team on a night in, night out basis so that they will pay their hard-earned money above and beyond what they're already doing. So I don't know what it'll ultimately be, Nick. I mean, in terms of going back to the Chuck and Ozzy, I don't know that Chuck and Ozzy are, they're not, I don't think they're White Sox employees. I don't know. I know just from the radio side of things, you know, with the White Sox radio network, you know, DJ and Len, they're part of the White Sox radio network. They're employed, you know, basically by the Chicago White Sox. They're not directly employed by ESPN 1000, if I'm getting this correctly, or there's a contract, right? So it's more of a decision on what the team wants, and then it's negotiated through and then on the air. And that was a big question. I know when the Bears came over to ESPN was, are Joniak and Thayer coming too? And that was a, you know, that was a contract thing, but they're part of the Bears radio network. So there's some agreements and contracts that they're kind of working in unison. I don't know how it works for the pre and post for that. If they're, you know, if that's worked in with the White Sox and if the White Sox have a say in who's doing their pre and post game show. Because the best thing about a White Sox game over the past several years is the pre and post game show. It's what people really care about. They really want to hear what Ozzy has to say. And Chuck is not going to hold back on his opinions on what this team is doing. So, and he speaks for a lot of the fans. So it's interesting to see what they will ultimately do. But if you look at what's happened recently, let's go back to John Schriffen. Here's the vanilla, new to the industry type of play-by-play guy. We can do the same thing in our pre and post game show. Here's just a very vanilla person that's going to tell you what happened in the game and maybe an opinion, but it's not going to be too over the top. And here's the very vanilla product that we have.
Yeah, I don't know. When Cubs went from NBC Sports Chicago to their marquee, mm-hmm. you know, and Howard mentioned it here in the chat, I had Xfinity cable at that time. I remember getting a notice that I was going to have to pay extra for marquee. Like it was going to be factored into my bill. I don't know if it was $7.99 or $9 or something more a month, which was absolutely gross. I mean, I didn't flip that channel on like Howard. I ignored that channel, but did Len go from NBC Sports Chicago calling games on TV to Marquee? And then did he leave Marquee after a year or so to come over to the radio with the Sox? I'm talking things out here as we're doing this. I don't know how it works. I don't know what's going to happen with Chuck and Ozzy and how this is all going to go. But I mean, if it's not included, like in my YouTube TV or if people, and if you're asked to pay, I mean, what would it be? Would it be $10 a month? Or because they're doing Bulls, Hawks, Sox, would it be a little bit more? I mean, everybody's got a million, you know, add-ons, right? From, you know, Hulu to Disney Plus to Amazon Prime to Netflix, like Peacock. Oh my goodness. You know, it's like, well, what's another $7.99? But then, like, you know, 6 months later, it's all of a sudden $12.99. What? Yeah, I don't know how that, but it's just interesting to see that there's going to be some change here in the fall.
I would just think if you want people to pay extra or pay anything to consume a product, why don't you have the product right first? And is that crazy?
It's not crazy. That's sane.
Okay.
It's the most sane thing I've heard probably all day.
Well, you do have a two-year-old at home. So maybe if you're comparing me to Vinny, then I guess that's probably true.
Andrew helping us out once again here says that if it's anything like Bally Sports, it's $19.99 a month, $20 a month to watch. You are getting Hawks, Bulls, and Sox, if that matters. I don't know what's, I don't know any of those teams if they're heading in the right direction, but
well, you can watch Bedard. I mean, there's something there, and then you can watch the Bulls, you know, be four under again and getting the play in game and maybe win a game, and get, you know, ousted and embarrassed after that.
Once Grifol gets fired, I'll think about that. If it's $20,
would you? Okay, so let's say that. Let's put that scenario out there. Now, I'm the door-to-door salesman selling you this TV package, Nick. Nick, what do I have to do to get you into this TV package today?
You got to fire Pedro Grifol.
I see.
You got to fire your hitting coach.
That is a non-starter. That is a non-starter, Nick. What else would you like to see happen?
You're asking me to pay $20 a month to watch the White Sox, and what do you need to do? It can't be $20. It's put it at $5.
Put it at $5. I think $5 would be even too high. It'll be interesting, but I guess it's almost like they got you by the short ones. If you're a White Sox fan and you want to watch White Sox baseball.
So, all you have to do as a White Sox fan is like with tickets, like, hey, I'm not ready to make that decision right now. It's not like you have to make that decision right away. The problem is you'll have to make that decision, what, around Halloween? Like, when does, you know, Hawks, Bulls, they start up around the same time in mid to late October.
Yeah.
But if you don't watch a lot of hockey or basketball, just say, you know what, let me see what the Sox do this offseason. You know, let me see, and then I'll make my decision closer to when the season starts.
Yeah, it is interesting because, I mean, I saw a stat the other day, you know, between streaming and then listening on the radio, last year, I think 1.3 million people listened to White Sox baseball, which kind of blew me away that many people would listen on the radio at one point or another during the season. So there are a ton of White Sox fans. That's what the other thing that drives me nuts is, oh, people don't care. People don't want to tune in. They don't give a shit because they're not showing up at the stadium. But there's a ton of us out there. And I just think that a lot of them are like you and I. It would be a hard sell right now for me to pay extra on my already enormous Comcast bill to consume this team on a night in and night out basis. It seems a little bit crazy.
You can do it in other ways, you know, when you with your schedule, and especially during the summer where everybody's everywhere, and you know, that's where I think radio, you know, those numbers are they escalate because you're out and about, you know, you're at Little League games, you're driving around, you're not home usually on the weekends. If you're anything like myself or Pat, or you've got all these, you know, you got kids, you're running around you're at ball fields all day long or doing yard work or something. You've got just the game on the radio. That's how it works there. But yeah, TBD. I want to get to this before we kind of start getting wrapping up and getting to that final Grifol quote of the week. So this was from the Sun Times on Saturday. This is Chris Getz talking to us all about possibly blowing it all up. I don't know. I don't know if it's going to all be blown up this season, but this
was
Getz.
Calling a bomb? Is he calling in bomb threats now? Is he George?
Hat giveaways, fitted hats, just like the ball players wear. None of those cheap knockoffs. Those are the Bombers' demands. Similar to the message from last fall and all off season, we will be open-minded on anything to further set us up for future success, Getz told the Sun-Times on Saturday. Our farm system continues to move towards the top of the majors, and it is vital for the long-term health of the organization to look for ways to add to it. I feel like I've heard this before, especially with regards to the farm system, but I don't mind this at all. You know, I think this is getting back to more of the realistic approach of where you are in 2024. You absolutely should be listening at the deadline on a lot of people. I mean, you know, I hate to bring up Crochet's name, but man, if someone wants to give you some crazy return on Garrett Crochet, I think you have to listen on that. You know, we don't know what he's capable of. He doesn't know what he's capable of. Okay. He's at 40 innings right now. And his high watermark is 54 innings. And that was in 2021. He's pitched 76 innings in the last 3 years, not counting this season. So you're saying we might have to have this guy in an innings limit. He might be going to the bullpen soon, which is something Grifol talked about. I mean, is Crochet available? I think they have to listen on everything, Pat.
Yeah, I'm willing to listen and trade basically anybody at this point. I mean anybody, and that includes 88. Okay, so let's not be delusional here anymore. Timelines aren't going to probably line up in terms of when this team is going to be competitive and maybe when some of the guys that are here are, you know, be contributing to this team when it's winning. So it's really about, you know, continuing to add to that system that, again, is climbing in terms of rankings. And I get it. It's really subjective and how these teams are ranked in the minors, or these systems are, rather. So, yes, looking at any possible opportunity, you need to make sure that you're getting the best possible value back for your assets. But there's no reason to hold on to guys unless you think that next year you're going to be back competing for the division. And if that's not the case, then you have to look yourself in the mirror and go, this is the best deal that I can do for the long-term health of our organization, is move this player for these 4-5 prospects and hope that at least two of them pan out for you, because not all of them will. It's a shitty situation to be in all the time is like moving guys around, especially when you start to come around and like a Garrett Crochet and what he can do and his upside and all that. But honestly, you have to be able to line up timelines with when guys are going to be here, when here comes the cavalry, and here's where my stars are still here. But I could also be talked into going, if you're going to go anywhere over the next several years, you have to build a foundation, you know, with a starting staff and then continue to add to it. So is Garrett Crochet in your long-term plans in terms of maybe the next 4 or 5 years on this staff? Then maybe you go, I can't sacrifice it because of a couple things. One, he's a left-handed arm, which we haven't had a dominant left-handed arm since Rodon, probably, right? And that was even a short-lived, you know, stint, if you will, when he was dominant. And he's got a lot of skill. There's a lot of things to like about it. So I don't know. It's all about like I think about it, like you're in a meeting room or in your office, and you have this big whiteboard, right? And you're going, okay, how is this all going to line up? These players this way and timelines here. When can this guy come up? And if it doesn't line up on your big board, this is a guy that's got to go.
Well, and those are decisions that I think sometimes the Sox have held on to guys way longer than that they were supposed to. I feel like they fell in love with their guys. Every team falls in love with their guys, but I feel like the Sox have done that, and it's been detrimental. It has really hurt this team, and we're experiencing it with guys playing out of position, guys just, you know, still searching for, you know, just rocks at certain spots, like where are our long-term solutions, and things have been muddied because of maybe not being honest with that big board. Maybe kind of like, you know, it's the heart and head situation, and one gets in the way. But so far Crochet's had 8 starts, roughly 40 innings, 32 hits, 24 earned runs, 9 walks, 53 strikeouts. That's I believe, if my math is correct, a 6-to-1 ratio, strikeouts to walks, which is awesome. Absolutely awesome. Opponents hitting .211 off of him. And again, the high watermark in a season is 54 innings. That was in 2021. So this is what Grifol had to say about first-time starter Garrett Crochet, who pitched 12 2/3 innings in relief last season and how he could go to the bullpen later this season as his workload is monitored. There's a possibility. Obviously, the workload is a real thing, Grifols said. We can't hide from that. The innings were really low last year. The pitches thrown were really low. Every time he steps on the mound is uncharted waters. So maybe that's why we get to see Brad Keller and possibly Mike Clevinger in the very, very near future. But all things considered, I've liked what I've seen from Garrett Crochet. You know, I mean, he's going to have his ups and downs this year. You know, he started out, I don't want to say dominant, but he was definitely in command. He surprised me. And yeah, we're going to see what we expected to see in innings limit. They're going to monitor him. But there might be some teams checking in. You know, Jack mentioned Eric Fetty, not a great outing, his last outing, but again, that's not going to deter teams at the deadline. If you've got something in your body of work, you know, up into the trade deadline, I guess forces a hand on a team that's like, hey, we're a starter or two away from really getting into the dance, and then anything can happen. I think you're going to have, you know, teams calling for him and maybe some of the arms, you know, that hopefully, you know, will continue to flourish for the White Sox in the bullpen.
At this point, Nick, as we sit here on what is today, May 5th, I don't think that this team is going to resemble what it will look like on, let's say, August 5th. I don't know when the trade deadline is, but there's going to be moves that are going to be made.
I think it's July 31st or August 1st, but yeah, you're close.
Something around there. So let's say August 5th, this team will not look anything like it does today.
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement. So up next, you got Tampa and you've got Cleveland. Before we talk again, here's our Pedro Grifol quote of the week as we wind things down. He said this earlier this week. It's the little things, Pedro Grifol said, of what's contributing to the White Sox 3-8 record in one-run games. We've got to clean it up, or we're going to get our ass kicked every night. So in Pedro, what I loved about that quote is Pedro's kind of living like in a different universe where it's like, hey, we might get our ass kicked here. Like it hasn't happened already yet. Like he's like not recognizing what has been going on as of late. So I love it. He's still preaching that. Got to clean it up. Got to flush it. It has been a problem, those one-run games. They managed to win one on Saturday, of course, in that rain-soaked, delay, weird, bizarre game. But Pedro, man on fire. He is continually obsessed, and I think he's a lame duck. But, man, got to can him if they want me to cough up that money for that new streaming service.
Yeah, when you say things in a post game that are the same thing every week, we've got to clean it up, we've got to flush it, da 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 da. You're obviously either you don't have the players to do that, and you're just banging your head against the wall, or you know, this team is not capable of conveying what needs to be done. And again, a lot of it, Nick, is this is stuff that you learn at, you know, very low levels of baseball that this team can't execute on. So it's got to drive, it's probably driving him crazy, honestly. It's like, listen, I shouldn't have to be telling you to clean this stuff up. I shouldn't be having to tell you that, you know, these are the little things that you have to be able to do as a major league player. It's kind of maddening when you think about it.
I hope like one of these days he just says, like, you know what, I'm just going to go in a different route. And his post games are like, you know, I'll get to that, but hey, has anybody seen Baby Reindeer on Netflix? Anybody been streaming that? Everybody got all their mulch done around their house? Because, you know, boy, I got some yard work I got to get to when I get home. Like, just kind of like, just completely ignores the question and just goes on his own little, like, you know, there was a college coach, football coach, that I thought used to do that, that would always I would laugh when I'd heard some of just his rants. Like, you know, it was like, I'm hearing you, but I'm not listening, and I'm going to just kind of talk about whatever I want to talk about right now and not even address the game. So
I think that would be more fun. I think you should look at it as, this is an opportunity for me to show my personality, whatever that might be.
Well, I think he's kind of auditioning, right? He's interviewing for his next job. So maybe show a little bit of his personality. I don't know.
Boy, oh boy. What is the lowest level that you can have on in terms of on a coaching staff for a major league team?
Well, I mean, according to what the Sox gave Grady Sizemore, it's baseball coach or major league baseball coach. That's what his designation was. So
remind me to tell you when we're not recording what I heard about Grady Sizemore the other day. I don't want to say it on these airwaves at the moment. Boy. So it's nothing, bad or salacious or, you know,
maybe Pat will create like a streaming service where you have to pay extra to hear some of these Grady Sizemore
stories. Yes. And we'll do it for like $3.99 a month.
$3.99 to hear Grady Sizemore stories from Pat Hester.
Yeah. After dark with Nick and Pat. After dark.
Well, I will remind you of that.
Taxi cab confessions version of Good Guys Talk
Back. I'm looking forward to that. Yeah. Hey, Pat, always a pleasure, buddy. I feel so much better. Our Sox won a series. We got Tampa now. We just swept them last time we saw them. Things are heading in the right direction.
Hey, look out. It's like a train going down a mountain, and that the tracks have just all greased up with WD-40. You can't stop us. Get out of the way.
The Tommy Pham, connection. I absolutely love it. Hope to see more of Brian Ramos this week. Really appreciate everybody jumping in the chats. It's so great. Pass this along to other Sox fans in your life. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, Good Guys Talk Back, like it and all that fun stuff. We're on Twitter X at Good Guys TV. We've got a Facebook fan page doing this every Sunday night at 9:15 live. Hey, for Pat Hester, I am Nick Morawski. Until next time, go Sox.